The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Dogen, in his chapter, Yubutsu, Yobutsu, Buddhas Alone, Together with Buddhas, begins with this quotation from the Lotus Sutra. Buddhas alone, together with Buddhas, are directly able to perfectly realize that all dharmas are real form. Buddhas alone, together with Buddhas, are directly able to perfectly realize that all dharmas are real form. All dharmas continuously arising at every moment. All beings, you and me, sentient and insentient, all beings are real form. I have chosen this chapter of great Master Dogen Shobha Gyentso to speak about because I am these days keenly aware of both the loneliness of practice and simultaneously of the wonder of the sense of sangha within which my practice is embedded. I know that I cannot do this alone, and yet my practice does not, cannot depend on others. Only this being can practice as this being. Only this Dharma can practice as this Dharma. Together with all Buddhas. It is as if the Buddhas and ancestors are always waiting eagerly in the wings to help. Help is constantly offered, and yet we need to have the humility to ask, please help me. Nonetheless, we cannot rest on the efforts of the past and the example set by these old ones. At the same time, practice is not a solitary endeavor. It is always the practice of the Buddhas. And the practice of the Buddhas is manifested through our own practice. I was struck at the first evening when Reverend Master Scholastica was describing how she was asked as a nurse to help Reverend Master Jiu, and how she learned in simply being around Reverend Master Jiu that this fine monk, this great master, was actually embodying practice in everything that she did, in how she was. Just thinking of how I was drawn to Shastra in the 1990s before Reverend Master Jiu died, I had a sense of many threads coming together and drawing me to Shastra. But I only realized the other evening that what the thread was Reverend Master Jiu's embodiment of being Buddha. I had never seen her, but I had heard her talks, her teaching. And carrying on from there, I hope, not using fancy words, I had a sense of Bodhidharma, travelling across the sea to China. Why did he do that? Why did I really come to Shasta? It was Reverend Master Jihu simply being Buddha, simply doing her daily practice, moment after moment. I see now that that was what drew me here. And it was not about two separate persons. Reverend Master Jihu, I'm sure, had no idea who I was. And yet, her teaching spread across the sea into my heart. As I said, she was simply getting on with her own training, embodying Buddha nature, true nature. The realization that comes through practice is not the achievement of an individual at all, or even for that matter, the individual as supported by a community. It is the teaching and example of the Buddha. What it really is the realization, this is the work of the Buddha Dharma actualizing itself. It is us, the Sangha, accepting the three treasures as something to rely on, entrusting ourselves to them. Have you noticed when you attentively engage in a ritual, in a ceremony, the ritual actually connects you to other practitioners and to the communal nature of our practice? We become part of a community, sympathetically responding to each other. This responsive communication extends to all beings. The truth of Buddha Dharma is that all dharmas are real form. And this can appear to us, this truth, in the flash of a moment, at any time and from any direction. It comes from the reciprocity of gratefulness which occurs between ancestors and practitioners, as well as between humans and non-humans. We are not alone. Birds and insects, trees and grasses, the rivers, mountains and stars are all our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, in the timeless process of birth and death. Shakyamuni and you practice together now. He has the same basic ingredients as the you of today, with similar impulses and conditioning. If you do not allow yourself to recognize this, you are a long way from home. We all practice together as this world, as it always has been, since beginningless time, through Shakyamuni, down to today. Each one of us has our own place and unique attributes. Buddhas constantly appear in the world. Thus all the Buddhas and ancestors are here in this very moment. Sometimes, particularly perhaps when we're reciting the ancestral line, we can know that we are not alone. We are surrounded by all the Buddhas and ancestors. It is in this spirit of the undivided that I've come to Shasta this month, deeply grateful to have been invited by Reverend Master Mayan and the community. It has given me an opportunity to offer bows of gratitude to the Abbey, to our founder, Reverend Master Jihu, to the American monks and the American lay sangha, for all that I've been offered over the years. The undivided can be recognized by all races, in every country, in all worlds. I was born and grew up in Southern Africa. And there's a Xhosa saying, or Xhosa word, Ubuntu, which means a person is a person through other persons. There is the undivided. Yet, as I was saying, one cannot rest upon the efforts of the past and the example set by the Buddhas and ancestors. Dogen begins Webutsu, Yobutsu thus. Buddha Dharma cannot be known by a person because it is realized by Buddhas alone. It is said, only a Buddha and a Buddha can thoroughly master it. Probably not something our ordinary minds can fathom. So we may ask, am I really included? Me, am I really included? If Buddha Dharma cannot be known by a person, only by Buddhas, where does that leave me? After all, I am a person. Yes, sure, but you are also a Buddha. You are both. This is the joy and grist of practice. Seeing how true nature and our often deluded human nature intertwine and weave together. How delusion and enlightenment are not separate. This came to mind as Reverend Master Mugo was speaking on the first morning. She spoke of seeing within and seeing beyond. Both. Not separate seeings. To continue the penetrating of what practice asks of us, contemplate these lines from the Lotus Sutra that Dogen quotes. The wisdom of the Buddhas is very profound and infinite. Their wisdom school is difficult to understand and difficult to enter. Does this mean, therefore, that we are excluded? Few of us, probably fortunately, have the hubris or spiritual pride to believe that we have profound and infinite wisdom. Few of us are likely to claim we understand and have entered the Buddha's wisdom school. Take heart, however, because we all, without any exceptions, are Buddha. We all can discover that realization does not depend on ordinary mind's thoughts, but comes forth far beyond them. In the Lotus Sutra, it is also said, this Dharma cannot be understood by powers of thought or discrimination. Only the Buddhas can discern it. Realization is never just as you expected it to be. We can't conceive of realization with ordinary mind. Rather, we simply live it and need not trouble ourselves with trying to fathom how it came about. Nonetheless, we are tempted to imagine what realization will be like, but true realization is not compatible with your imaginings. So to imagine beforehand is not useful. However, imagining realization is not bad or misguided, because imaginings are themselves realization. Nothing is excluded. So don't be discouraged. Realization, which is making practice real for ourselves, realization does exist. And our attempts to try to work it out in words or images are not in vain. We need to be willing to try, even though our trying may not get us to where we imagine we are aiming. If we do not divide thoughts into good or bad, then there's no temptation to dismiss thoughts as not being realization. Sitting in Zazen, you may say, "This can't be realization. Look at these thoughts." Looking at things that way, yes, it's not realization. But that is because you are making it so. This is being what Dogen calls small-minded. And being small-minded is saying what is and what is not realization. Another description of small-mindedness is divided-mindedness. Our human brains are hardwired to categorize and divide, so we so easily fall into the trap of dualism, dividing thoughts into good thoughts and bad thoughts, rather than seeing that everything, our entire being, is Buddha nature. There are not two people here. Our good being, that is Buddha nature, and has good thoughts, and our imperfect being, that is our frail human nature, and has bad thoughts. Something needs to change within us so that we stop separating into good and bad, or judging that our behavior or the behavior of others is good or bad. Reading Master Seikai's booklet on the Paramitas, this line jumped out. Just maybe things are okay the way they are. And it is our habitual responses that need to change. Dogen says, from the beginning we have the true mind of Buddha. And if we take what he says really seriously, then when we feel like it's all falling apart, this too is the true mind of Buddha. Take seriously the question, how can this possibly be the true mind of Buddha when I am ungrounded and in distress? Accepting such a state of things as they are right now, being in the heart of this, then there, exactly there, is the true mind of Buddha. Having the courage to sit with the thoughts just as they are, not continuing them by adding to them or trying to get rid of them, not distracting yourself from them, rather just sitting. It can take decades to experience what neither trying to think nor trying not to think really asks of us. It sounds simple, yet demands constant awareness and choice. We are asked to make this choice time and time again, so as not to fall into trying to think things through, or embroidering thoughts, or denying that thinking is arising because we're trying so hard not to think. There is a middle way. There is the undivided, which is infinitely broad. Do not believe it is absent. A lot of faith and a lot of trust are called for. We can do it. All of us can do it. Everything we choose, say, and think is already realization. But if we are seeking something other than realization, what we choose, do, say, and think is not a help for realization. Ultimately, realization is only helped by the power of realization itself, not by the power of our thoughts, our speech, our action. This may be difficult for some of us to accept because we want to work things out for ourselves, imagining we can and we should do so. We are Buddha from the first, and yet at the same time our behavior, when we're upside down or confused, is not the behavior of a Buddha, but of a muddled human being. Simply notice and acknowledge the upside-downness of confused actions and thoughts. That is sufficient. Truly, that is sufficient. That is the way. Truly, that is all that is asked of us if we are to deeply know sufficiency, to rest peaceful and content. I found it can be helpful to regularly ask myself questions such as, why am I doing this? Why, at the deepest level, do I long to live the life of practice? We don't need to come up with answers. The question already contains the answers. The question is vitally important. In the Kyujikaimon, in commenting on Do Not Defame the Three Treasures, Dogen writes, to do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world. Hence, trying to make your experience conform to others' description of realization is not helpful. We can only become an example to the world, each in our own individual way. Each individual way is the embodiment of the Dharma of real form. Nobody's way is insufficient. Nobody's way is excluded. Nobody's way is better than anybody else's way. There are not two people here. There is not comparison. It is the undivided. So only a Buddha can transmit to a Buddha, and only a Buddha understands the truth entirely. If you feel this can't apply to you, as you can't claim to understand the truth entirely, then be patient, trust, and have faith, for the truth does arise naturally. As you recite at the end of Rules for Meditation, the treasure house will open naturally, and you will enjoy it fully. Realization does arise naturally. It cannot be forced by us through our longing for the truth. Is Dogen saying that everything, no matter how seemingly insignificant or confused, is never apart from the truth? Yes. For the truth embraces everything. It exists before the division into good or bad, confused or enlightened. Dogen goes on to say that unsurpassed wisdom and Buddha are the same. We rightly want to know what it is like on this path to wisdom and Buddhahood. What is it like to be undivided Buddha and wisdom? When we accept our own particular individual foibles, and don't exclude any of our humanity. We are on the path. And it is good that we continue to ask what the truth is that only a Buddha can understand entirely. The question is the important thing. Don't strive for the answers. An aspect of our humanity is to be goal-orientated and to attempt to discriminate good from bad. We are hardwired to do so, but we can hold our views more lightly when we acknowledge that different groups have different views of what is good and what is bad. We learn to live with difference, and we are able to do so because fundamentally we know that we are undivided. We all are Buddha. We all are unstained. Intending to live an unstained or undivided life is admirable, but paradoxically is ultimately not helpful, because we simply already are unstained and undivided. As our trust grows that we and all things are Buddha nature, we begin more and more to live from that place of the unstained. And what previously disheartened us in our habitual ways of being and interacting with others changes of itself. And what I'm saying is, being unstained does not result from purification. Rather, in doing as best we can the work that comes to each of us, we can naturally leave behind the selfish mind. When wholeheartedly doing the work that comes to us, we do not examine ourselves asking, am I now purified or am I not yet purified? We just do the work that comes. And if there's some correction that is needed in how we're doing the work, well, that is the work that comes at that moment. What is it to be unstained in the midst of your thoughts crashing around, or when you're having a bad day? Notice that if it's overly important to you to live a pure life, then you are preoccupied with impurity. Categorizing all situations and all your responses to them into pure and impure. Beware, always beware of our tendency to create duality. It is the way the human brain works. Remember, not two. All is one and all is different. As Hui Hai said, the only true purity is to live in a way which transcends purity and impurity. I would add, we transcend purity and impurity by our willingness to live with any condition in each and every moment, accepting it, not labeling what comes as good or bad. If we look for why we do things from the point of view of a Buddha, this is the unstained. We are completely accepting the crashing around that is going on, and thus we see the unstained. It takes dedicated practice to open our eyes to the Buddha knowledge so that we may gain pure mind. Again, Dogen's quoting from the Lotus Sutra, open our eyes to the Buddha knowledge so that we may gain pure mind. Looking with the eye of Buddha is like meeting a person and not reacting to their appearance. Rather, we simply meet them without judging, without categorizing. We can meet others and ourselves in this way. We can accept every aspect of the person as they present themselves. We can do the same thing with aspects of ourselves, as these aspects present themselves. We can learn wholeheartedly to accept every aspect of ourselves just as we are, accepting with no holds barred. See the beauty of Buddha nature that we all have in common. Greet it with joy. This can be compared to rejoicing in the flower as it presences itself. Don't wish for more colour. Rejoice too in the moon as it presences itself. Don't wish it were brighter, larger, full rather than fingernail. When we look in this way, whatever we see is infinitely precious in its presencing. As Reverend Master Mugo spoke about sitting in the garden, eating her breakfast, and the hummingbird on the sunflower. That was infinitely precious in its presencing. What we are doing is clarifying that there's nothing to be disliked or longed for. It would have been a mistake to go and sit in the same chair and look at the sunflower and see no hummingbird, to have longed for that and disliked the fact that one didn't come. Then I would not have been clarifying that there is nothing to be disliked or longed for. Let's move on to consider what the Dharma that the Buddhas expound is, and what actually does expounding entail. The Buddha appeared in the world to save sentient beings. Is the appearance of a Buddha all that it takes to save sentient beings? Look at Buddhas and you will see that though they offer teaching, from their point of view, they are simply doing what needs to be done, which is realizing, showing, entering the way. Rav Master Jiu wrote in her commentary on Do Not Defame the Three Treasures, "The Lord of the House does not do things in the normally accepted ways, nor do the Buddhas and ancestors. They are not individual, and they are not the same as each other. Each expresses the truth in his own way, as do all things. Thus, Buddhas expound in their own particular way, and very often such expounding is wordless. Saving sentient beings is the appearance of a Buddha. Look at Buddhas and you will see that they are simply doing what needs to be done, which is realizing, showing, entering the way." I offer a personal anecdote about how the appearance of a Buddha saves sentient beings. My first conscious meeting with a Buddha was in the form and figure of Reverend Master Daishin, Abbot of Throstlehold Buddhist Abbey. I was at a conference called Eastern Approaches to Body and Mind, which had been organized by a fellow psychologist. He was also a practicing Buddhist in the Chan tradition, as handed down by Venerable Sen Yen. Master Daishin had been invited to the conference as one of the keynote speakers. There were also Tibetan Buddhist teachers, including Sogyal Rinpoche, an Indian nun, a rabbi, and probably many others I have forgotten. Rav Master Daishin did not appear in order to save me. He simply came because he was invited. But his appearance was all that I needed to be sure I wanted to live my life as he was living his, whatsoever that meant. Did anybody else notice that even if Reverend Master Daishin had not yet preached a word of preaching had been let loose all around? Do you understand? If not, chew on this. All the Buddhas of the past, present and future worlds are practicing together with each person. It is possible for all of us to know that Buddhas are always practicing together with us. We are not alone. We are not separated from the Buddhas and ancestors by time, distance, space. We are all together practicing in the same manner as the entire universe and all beings. You may have doubts about this. If you do, it may help to remember that Buddhas are none other than you. You are Buddha. We all are Buddha. Reflect quietly and realize that your body and mind has, since before time began, practiced with all the Buddhas of past, present and future, and has together with them aroused the thought of enlightenment. Sit still with the immensity of this, and it can become an everyday, unremarkable possibility, as well simultaneously as a wondrous reality. In sitting, we cannot find a boundary of self or a boundary of other, or any boundary between us and anything else in the entire world. Understanding that the truth is not a matter of your knowing or your not knowing. I shall end with considering Dogen's final teaching in Wibutsu Yobutsu, where he offers a perspective from the animal world on Buddhas alone, together with all Buddhas. No one except a fish knows a fish's heart. No one except a bird follows a bird's trace. Fish know one another's intention and have the same heart. How can we know a fish's intention if we do not have a fish's heart? Can humans have a fish's heart? Knowing the mind of a fish is about knowing the mind that seeks the way. The fish are all swimming upstream and know what they are doing, for they have all heard the same call. Thus it is for us in following the practice. We have all heard the same call. If we do not know there is such a thing as a bird's trace, we cannot imagine it. However, a bird can see the traces of hundreds and thousands of small birds having passed in flocks, or traces of so many lines of large birds having flown south or north. We human beings are becoming less anthropomorphic as we begin to gather evidence of the animal behavior over the decades. We are amazed by how animals communicate, how they learn and adapt. We may feel embarrassed as the observational data accumulates and reveals how human-centered we have been. Dogen suggests that Buddhas would not be surprised because they, for example, see birds' traces with the Buddha eye, the eye of Vairochana. Buddhas know their own traces. You never know a Buddha's trace when you are not a Buddha. You may bump into a Buddha on the street and not notice anything exceptional about the person. Or on the other hand, you may be struck by someone's appearance and wonder why. They seem so ordinary, and yet... Search out the traces of a Buddha's path. If you find footprints, investigate whether they are a Buddha's footprints. Allow the nudge of intuition to break through the scientific mind, which demands undeniable proof. So take the risk of believing that this is a Buddha you are seeing in the marketplace. Understand that to illuminate your trace is accomplished by studying a Buddha's trace. Illuminate your trace by studying a Buddha's trace. When you find a Buddha's trace, then follow in faith. Take the leap to commitment with your entire body and mind. Be willing to take your own steps to the very heart of commitment. Be confident enough to make your own traces for others to see. Let go of self-consciousness and precipitate yourself into practice. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.